Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live from the Blog Talk Radio studio in the heart of Hudson County. Folks, you know, Insider NJ proudly brings to you the three-time, and I'll say it again, the three-time award-winning, politically direct, and I am New Jersey's premier journalist, top 100 Latino via the Latino Spirit Online magazine, and of course also the host of the critically acclaimed Real Talk via EyesMNJ News, Fernando Uribe. Hope you're all doing well, ladies and gentlemen. Happy June to you all. Hope you had a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. I sure did. And hopefully we start the month of June on a positive note. And certainly to everyone listening from wherever and however you may be doing so, I thank you so much again for tuning in here on the 3rd of June in 2021. Now, you can write to the show's inbox at any time, folks. It's always politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. It's politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. I've been meaning to update the page. I will do so, folks, slowly but surely. It'll get done. And also, you can check out my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. Tons of new likes, plenty of new followers. I know many of you enjoy my Instagram stories. I've been very active the last few days. Obviously, there's a lot in the news cycle that I want to brag about, saying that I was right. We all know what that is, whether it's about the Fauci emails or other things concerning COVID-19. Oh, I was calling it for a while, but yeah, remember, I was a conspiracy theorist. I was the nut job. Well, Dr. Uribe knows what he's talking about, but you already know that, and that's why you tune in every week here. Once again, on insidernj.com/podcast. Also, hit me up on Twitter, folks, at NoFilterUribe. And for all you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. And now I do want to hear from you tonight, so don't be shy and call me toll-free, 818-572-8032. Once again, our toll-free number, 818-572-8032. And our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, folks, again, remember to check out Insider NJ by going to the website, www.insidernj.com, for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Again, nobody does it better than Insider NJ. And let me just start off by saying, because, you know, it's interesting to me how Insider NJ in these 3 years has evolved into what I would call the pinnacle of journalism in New Jersey. And I can't say enough how proud I am to be a part of this team, really, you know, hosting this podcast since January of 2018, taking a lot of risks here, taking, you know, some gambles, right? Because not everybody likes to listen to political podcasts. But I knew that this is a project that I wanted to get behind, and I have to be so grateful, and I have to show my gratitude once again to the Insider NJ family. Start at the top with the Graham family, obviously Mike Graham specifically, not just because he cuts a check to me, obviously, but because of his belief in my abilities and his belief in me as a journalist to come out here every week and bring you interesting guests to ask the questions that we need to, you know, that we want answers to, and to, you know, just have a dialogue with people on all sides of the aisle. So I'm especially grateful to Mike Graham. I'm especially grateful to my boss, Insider NJGM Pete Anelia. I know he doesn't always like when I drop his name on the air, but he is a great boss to work for. I know I can be a pain in the ass to him. He can be a pain in the ass to me sometimes too, but we work well together, and I'm grateful to Pete for his continued belief in this program. And again, you know, having played organized sports in my life, you know, you may not like all your teammates, but on game day, you find a way to sort of cultivate all your talents together for a common goal, and that's to win. That's to be the best in your field. And that's what we do. And I certainly, listen, I think when it comes to the team I'm part of, I'm surrounded by very great journalists, you know, guys in their own right. Now, I don't like some of them. You know, for example, our editor-in-chief, Max Bizarro. I don't like Max at all, personally. I know he doesn't like me. I would just say it's probably just testosterone, right, when it comes to Max and I. And that's okay. You know, not everyone has to like me. But I respect Max for being a journalist as long as he's been. I don't always agree. Actually, I never agree with his political views. But he's a great journalist. So when he writes columns, some of them he gets right and some of them he gets wrong. You know, it's up to you to make that decision when you read his columns. But again, he's a great teammate and certainly, you know, can't say enough about his contributions to journalism in New Jersey. Same thing with Jay Lasseter. You know, I don't like Jay very much. He doesn't like me, and that's all right. You know, but he's a talented writer. He has good sources. He's an excellent researcher, and he puts out great columns. You know, I don't really agree with any of his political views, as he doesn't believe in mine, or he doesn't, you know, like mine at all. But again, we find a way to coexist, and that's important. And of course, you know, we have Fred Snowflack, who's an excellent writer. He's been, you know, a guest frequently on this show. And I really enjoy talking to Fred. Same thing with Alan Steinberg. I don't agree with a lot of what Alan has to say, but he's a talented writer. And I, you know, give him his due all the time. And he's a regular here every month on the program. So he was just on 2 weeks ago, actually. And if you missed that episode, I definitely want you to tune into that. It was a very lively discussion. But again, folks, I'm proud to be a part of the Insider NJ team. We're doing good work. Actually, we're doing the best work that I would argue in the state of New Jersey. So, again, check out InsiderNJ.com. When you click on the homepage, you'll see the subscribe button. Click on the top, and you'll see the subscribe button. Do me a favor. Click on that, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So when you're getting up in the morning watching maybe sports shows like I do, I love watching Fox Sports. You know, I wake up all watching First Things First. It put me to sleep sometimes. You know, Nick Wright isn't exactly the most visibly appealing human being to look at, but, you know, he's interesting as well as the panelists there. I love watching Undisputed with Skip and Shannon, and, of course, The Herd with Colin Cowherd at noon. But as I'm doing that, I'm going through my phone, right, like many of you are. So when you're doing that, you'll see the morning intelligence briefing there waiting for you, and guess what? You know, it's, again, the best collection of journalism in the state. All the scoops, all the headlines, everything that you need to know about what's going on in New Jersey, hey, Insider NJ does it for you. And again, as I said, they know how to get these scoops, and they know how to make sure that you are up to date on what's going on in New Jersey politics. So again, folks, check out InsiderNJ.com. Make sure you like them on Facebook and also follow them on Twitter. And remember to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed here tonight and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalist, or the staff. Well, folks, you know, one thing I pride myself on with this program for 3 years is bringing you the exclusives that other shows do not bring you in New Jersey media. And it's a reason why this podcast, one of the probably the premier political podcast in the state of New Jersey, continues to go strong is because of the strength of my guests. Whether it's Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives, whoever, I love talking to people on this show, and I love bringing the exclusives that you want to hear from. And, of course, this week is no exception. Joining me here tonight live, ladies and gentlemen, is the distinguished assemblyman of the 25th Legislative District, my good friend, Brian Bergen. Mr. Assemblyman, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate your time, Mr. Assemblyman. It's busy days in New Jersey, you know. It's a lot going on, obviously. First and foremost, how's the family? Everyone healthy? How's everyone doing during this difficult
time? Yeah, Fernando, everybody's fantastic. Thank you. I appreciate you asking.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, folks, again, and for our audience tonight here, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not familiar with District 25, it does comprise various municipalities in both Morris and Somerset County. They do include Bernardsville, Booton Township, Chester Township, Denville, Dover, Mendham Borough, Mendham Township, Mine Hill, Morris, Morristown, Mount Arlington, Mountain Lakes, Netcong, Randolph, Rockaway Borough, Roxbury, Victory Gardens, Washington, and Wharton. Wow, that's a mouthful, to say the very least, Mr. Assemblyman. But first and foremost, what has been the feedback to you and the leadership, again, legislatively? Because, again, in your district, and, you know, I had the good fortune of talking with your fellow legislators, State Senator Anthony Bucco, a few months back, and obviously, you know, I've been talking to others in the last, you know, a few months since COVID, really over the year that COVID has ravaged the state. What's been the feedback in your district about how you and your legislative office have responded to your constituents?
Yeah, no, the feedback's been very good, Fernando. You know, one thing that's a little bit unique to me, I think, is that my legislative office is comprised of people that's sole job is to work on constituent services. I don't have anybody in the office daily who's working on legislative stuff for me. I handle all that stuff myself. And what that allows me to do is focus all the time and attention of my staff to work for the people that we're supposed to be there working for. And taking those phone calls and answering emails and responding in time to all the constituents. So we make it a priority, and any constituent that calls into the office or emails in that wants to talk to me, they schedule time for them to talk to me directly, and I make phone calls out to them. So when I first took office, I made sure that constituent services was the top priority for the staff. The legislative work, I can do myself, and that's what I typically do.
Now, Mr. Assemblyman, one of the things that really has caught my eye about not just your presence in the legislature, and this is something I talk about all the time, and I get a lot of grief, and I really want to pick your brain about this. I get a lot of grief on social media from a lot of people from different sides of the aisle, and especially in my role as a journalist and as a commentator, I get so much grief because people write to me constantly, whether it's emails or texts or DMs that say, you know, Fernando, you're really harsh on Democrats and liberals. You come up with these funny names because you're trying to be cute. You know, when you refer to the social justice clowns and the woke fools and the compassion mongers, it just seems like you're never harsh or punitive on Republicans and conservatives. And my answer, Brian, can I call you Brian? Is that cool? Can I call you Brian?
Of course. Yeah, please.
Okay. So and my answer all the time, Brian, is, well, you know, it's not Republicans and conservatives like me that are in the majority in the legislature. It's not Republicans or conservatives that are pushing the agenda. They're not the ones controlling the budget. They're not the ones shoving down legislation down the throats of New Jerseyans. I mean, there's one party to blame, and it's Democrats. So when I tell people, hey, if you hate the fact that the cost of living continues to rise in New Jersey, the fact that property taxes are the highest in the country, the fact that there's another gas tax maybe on the way, who knows, or maybe a mileage tax, don't blame Republicans, Brian. You got to blame Democrats and liberals and the far left in New Jersey. And that's always my response. You know, is that fair of me to say?
Well, it's 100% fair for you to say. I mean, look, they have complete control of the government right now. They control the governor's office. They control both legislative branches. And virtually every bill that passes through that legislature is a product of the Democrats. And, you know, like you said, they control everything that goes through there. And they've been crazy. I mean, it's not like the stuff that they've been doing is moderate. It's not moderate. They passed something, talk about using cute titles for things. They passed something a couple months ago called the Healthy Terminals Act. You would think that that would be related to health and the terminals. But in reality, it was a brokered deal with a union to increase the minimum wage for all workers at Newark Airport to $23.54 an hour. And they did it under the guise of helping them afford health care. You know, and they tried to pin it as all the workers at Newark Airport are on the front lines in this pandemic, and, you know, they're subject to all this risk and these contaminants and this danger. But what does that have to do with the person selling potato chips at a concession stand? They got to make $23.54 an hour. It's ridiculous. And so the titles that you're giving them, they're making themselves, because the agenda of the Democrats in the state of New Jersey is not a moderate agenda. It's completely far left liberal agenda driven by Phil Murphy and allowed to happen by Senate President Sweeney and Speaker Coughlin.
I mean, it's really disappointing. And we'll get to the governor in a minute, and a little bit later, excuse me, about, you know, obviously his reelection chances. But, you know, you bring up a good point about the way that, and listen, if you've been watching the news cycle, ladies and gentlemen, in the last 48 hours, 72 hours, we're all seeing, you know, people like me who were vilified on social media for being conspiracy theorists or for people that were being ultra defiant about COVID and COVID restrictions. And guess what? Now we're learning, you know, even State Senator Panaccio today on the floor of the state Senate was very defiant about calling out what we think were very bad practices. And it's just funny to me, Brian, that I don't want to weaponize or politicize the virus, but it just seems like COVID really has done irreparable harm, aside from medically, but I think economically to New Jersey. And I think also from a cultural perspective, I don't mean culture like along the ethnic lines. I mean our political culture. I mean, I think COVID has really divided people in this last year and a half. And I'm sorry, I'm really, really nervous that this is something we may not recover from as a state or even as a country. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, so yes, I agree with you 100%. And I particularly, I agree with you on what COVID-19 has allowed the Democrats in the state of New Jersey to consolidate power in a way that's very dangerous. And we see that and have seen that for the past year with the governor of the state of New Jersey acting completely unilaterally and with complete disregard for the opinions of other people and without any advice and consent or a care for what the legislature believes. And we saw that happening, and the legislature has had the ability since day one to rein the governor in, because the powers that he enjoys to act unilaterally are statutory powers. So the legislature could have reeled him in, but chose not to. And then today, Fernando, we witnessed the legislature following lead on Governor Murphy and abusing power like we've never seen before. There was a bill today that was supposed to, quote unquote, end the health emergency. It doesn't really do that. It's a farce of a bill. It's completely useless. But that's not the point here. The point here is the bill was moved to the floor without going through a public committee and without public scrutiny. And that's really dangerous. And so that disregard for others and abuse of power that we've seen the governor do over the past year and a half, I think has maybe gotten some other people power hungry. And now we're seeing the state legislature use loopholes in the way things are written to circumvent the public's input. And that is a bad thing for everybody. And that, I believe, is going to be the absolute worst thing that comes out of this pandemic for us.
I'm with you on that, and I think it's something we have to keep an eye out for, and it's something, especially in an election year, Brian, that should be on everyone's mind. And folks, if you're just joining us right now, it's 9:20 on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. It's my pleasure to welcome here tonight, exclusively, on Politically Direct, the distinguished assemblyman out of the 25th Legislative District, our good friend Brian Bergen here tonight on InsiderNJ.com/podcast. Brian, I got to ask you, as I mentioned, it is an election year. All 120 legislative seats are up for grabs. Something I've been noticing out of Morris County, I know that's a big, big chunk of your legislative district. You know, for as long as I can remember, there were just parts of New Jersey that were solid one color or the other. And for example, up here in Hudson County where I live, it's as blue as, I mean, they haven't elected a Republican legislator since the 80s, probably around the time of, you know, former Governor Tom Kane. It's been solidly blue. There have been parts of the Jersey Shore that have been solidly red. And for a very long time, you know, Morris County was always looked upon as a very red county. That seems to be changing lately. I've seen what the Morris County Democratic Committee has been doing. And in an area of the state that usually was very reliably red, it seems to be turning a little purple. And I don't know, is that a concern for Republicans like yourself that are seeking re-election this year, as well as your running mates?
Well, of course, it is. It's always a concern. I would be hesitant to give any credit for anything that's happening, though, to the Morris County Democratic Committee. Yeah, they're an incompetent organization, and they're just lucky that there happens to be a migration of people from the city out to the suburbs, and that is changing some of the demographics here. So it's not by virtue of any good strategy on their part. It's dumb luck, to be honest. Yes, Morris County is not as red as it used to be. Am I concerned? I'm always concerned. I think as an elected official in an election year, you always have to act as if you're 10 points down or else you're always at risk. I mean, I look at politics, it's like the Game of Thrones. You know, you're on your way up until your head gets lopped off and you're gone. So you always got to be on the defensive about that. But let me just say something about this red, blue and the state of New Jersey and the minority, majority. I just read a book by John Boehner, and it just came out recently. And I didn't know much about him, politics at that level from back in the 90s. I really wasn't interested in it. But the book really, really intrigued me, and it taught me a lot, because what I didn't realize was when John Boehner got into Congress, there was a Democratic majority for quite some time. And there was some Newt Gingrich was there, and there was some changes and some good timing with Bill Clinton. But the bottom line is this: they decided, John Boehner and others who were in the minority, made the conscious decision that they were tired of being in the minority, and they set goals and took action and fought and gained the majority. And I think that's something that we lack here in New Jersey in the Republican Party. If I hear an excuse about the damn map one more time, I'm going to go berserk, because it's an excuse for continued failure. And what I believe we can do as a Republican Party in the state of New Jersey at the legislative level is, if we decide finally and really we decide, you know what, we want to win. We're tired of a Democratic-controlled state legislature, and we want to make a concerted effort to take back control. I think we can do it. But, you know, it's like anything else in life. Until the goal is written down on paper, you're not moving towards anything. And that's where we're stuck at today. So you're right in the fact that there is a change in the demographics, and there's a change from red to purple. But I think that's all excuses. In my impression is that winners win. And if you choose to be a winner, you act like a winner, you will win and find a way.
You know, Brian, that's well said. And it's interesting you bring that up, because I've been very critical of the NJGOP for many months now. And I've got, you know, word has gone back to me from sources of mine that people at the NJGOP are not happy with my commentary, that they find me to be overly critical. It seems like I have an axe to grind. No, I don't. I'm not looking for a job. I'm not running for anything. Okay, I ran for the state assembly 10 years ago. I did it as a favor to the county party, and that's it. You know, I chose to pursue journalism, which I think I'm good at in terms of commentary and everything else. It just seems like the NJGOP isn't serious. And you just, I think you hit the nail on the head right now. They're not serious about taking majorities. Like, I'm not saying it can be done in one cycle. But again, and for our audience, you know, here are some numbers that should really concern New Jerseyans. Number one, Democrats have a 25 to 15 majority in the state Senate, and they have a 52 to 28 majority in the state assembly. Those are big majorities, but it doesn't mean insurmountable ones. It just seems like, for whatever reason, the NJGOP isn't serious about running candidates that can win, because there is disenchantment with the Democratic Party in this state. There has been. They've controlled the legislature 20 years. Yes, we've had Republican governors, we've had Democratic governors, but for 20 years, Democrats have run the legislature, and they've run it into the ground with reckless fiscal policies, these ridiculous pursuits of, like, these social justice causes, you know, being woke, you know, acquiescing to the alphabet army. And it just seems like that's not having a spine. And that's what concerns me about the state of the Republican Party in New Jersey, Brian, where, yeah, we have people, we have good people like you and your fellow legislators in your district and others, like State Senator Testa, State Senator Panaccio, others, you know, Assemblyman DePhillips, Assemblyman Rooney, who have been on this program multiple times. But it's just not enough. It's got to be a concerted effort from Republican leadership in the state, and that's not happening. I think that's at the core of the problem that you just alluded to, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's right. And we got to work on building a bench. We got to work on running solid candidates across the state. I mean, I helped recruit candidates this year for LD27. I've got Jonathan Sim, thank goodness, and Kevin Ryan, who are great candidates, and they're going to put up a good fight in that district. We have other places that are going to run solid efforts, but it's not a unified effort. And again, like I said, there's no goal written down on paper. There's no decision made that we're going to make it happen. There's no, you know, there's no urgency behind it. But you know what? I'm fired up about it, and I can promise you that you will see urgency in the future. And if it needs to be led by me, it'll be led by me. But either way, I enjoy to some degree functioning in the role of the minority, because the minority has an important role, and that's to beat the ever living snot out of the majority so that they can to force them back into the middle. And I think that's an important role to play in politics. And I think I'm doing that pretty well right now, but I want to be in the majority because I want to make policy, good policy, for the state of New Jersey. And I'm not going to be happy being in the minority. So if I'm not happy with it, I'm going to work my butt off to get us back into the majority, and I have plans to do so.
Now, Brian, do you think it's realistic to pick up seats this legislative election cycle in the assembly? I mean, again, it's a really big disadvantage, you know, 52 to 28. Is it possible to maybe shave that off a little bit of that lead this election cycle? I mean,
sure.
Obviously, I know you're running for re-election. I know your running mates are as well. But do you see other potential assembly candidates that really have a good chance here, I think, to help? Again, it's kind of crazy to think maybe in this cycle, maybe even by 2023, but maybe make a dent in those majorities. Do you think that's feasible this year?
Yeah, I do. I think we've got a good shot in LD2 of picking up two seats there. I think that's probably one of our strongest spots. We can potentially pick up some seats, especially in the assembly level in LD11. LD16, I think Roy Fryman is weak. Zwicker's moving up to the Senate, so there's an opportunity in 16. I think there is opportunity, but I think that we could possibly do it, but we haven't. Again, this has not been a concerted effort that's been planned for years, and that's what it will take to really make a big move. That's not what's happened this time, but I've met all the candidates. I'm out there helping the candidates. Something I think, Fernando, I think you'll find interesting. I'm going to start something this year called the Bergen Brigade, and it's going to be modeled after something that the Croce used to do. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this. Well, he used to travel to different districts and bring some volunteers with him to help, and that hasn't been done in quite some time. So I started this thing called the Bergen Brigade, got T-shirts and stickers for the van and all that stuff made. And I'm going to load up 15-pack vans full of my volunteers, and we're going to go to places like LD8 and 11 and 16 and 2 and help these folks hit doors and win. And we're also going to go to places like 27, and we're going to go to 36, whose candidates are doing a write-in campaign right now, and help them to – even if they can't win, okay, because winning is very important, and I want to win everywhere. But even if they can't win, to keep an incumbent in a challenging district from sending their money to other districts is also a win. So if we can prevent candidates in Hudson County, as an example, from sending their money down to LD2, we got a better chance of picking up those two seats in LD2. So if we think about it like that, I'm going to use my volunteers, put the Bergen Brigade in action, and try and really help out my teammates.
Well, listen, I think that's a really proactive stance to take, Brian, and certainly we'll see what, you know, obviously what it materializes into, not just on primary day, but subsequently later on in the fall during the general election. Let me ask you this, though, because, again, primary day is on Tuesday, and while the governor doesn't have any challengers right now, the Republican field is really, it's a weird field because it's four very different candidates. Brian, I got to tell you, man, a lot of different sources talk to me around the state, and they'll say to me consistently, hey, this is not a very inspiring bunch here. We understand that Jack Cirilli, the former assemblyman, has picked up almost every major endorsement. He's been literally campaigning for 3 years now up and down the state trying to win over, you know, establishment Republicans and everything else, trying to win over independents. How do you see this race coming up on Tuesday? Do you think Jack can sort of win in a runaway race, or do you see this being closer than people think?
You know, I have a feeling it's going to be Jack's going to pull it off pretty significantly, honestly. I mean, first of all, I admire all the candidates for getting into the race. I really do. And I think they're all bringing something to the table, and they're all bringing messages we need to hear. And they're forcing each other to be better candidates. There's something that we say when I was up at West Point, and is by Douglas MacArthur, which is, you know, on the fields of friendly strife are sown the seeds, which on other fields, on other days, will bear the fruits of victory. And that's what's happening here. They're hardening the candidate who wins and making that candidate more prepared for battle, so to speak, which is the general election. So everybody has an important role to play. I do think Jack's gonna take it. I do think he's going to take it pretty handily. Phil Rizzo just came in too late. He's got good ideas. He's a good candidate. He's got a good following. He's a nice guy. But he came in way too late to the race. I just don't think he has the momentum. And I just don't think enough people are drawn to Hursting. I really don't. I mean, Hursting's winning the sign war out there. If you go by sign count, he's definitely going to win the race. But I think the reality is that Jack, you know, has the lines, which is very, very important. And I think a lot of people understand in the Republican Party that we need somebody who's a little more moderate to have a shot of taking down Phil Murphy.
Well, listen, we'll see what happens on Tuesday. And speaking of the governor, during the day, Brian, I'm a history professor and I'm a big fan of history. And right now, history is not on the governor's side. A Democrat has not been reelected governor since the days of Brendan Byrne. That's a while back. That's before our time, almost, basically. And despite the governor last year polling very high, I'm always skeptical about polls anyway, but a most recent poll had him at about 53%. A new poll this week came out saying that he's polling ahead at 11% ahead of Jack Cirilli if the election were held today. You know, again, the governor has a lot of support in the cities, in the very urban areas, in the county machines. But it's my understanding the governor's not taking the race lightly, even though he seems to be in the driver's seat. How do you see Governor Murphy's chances this year?
Look, like you said, history is not on his side. I think it's all going to come down to the messaging and the ability to reach out and touch voters and get them to understand that, you know, that this pandemic was mishandled and the governor is to blame for a lot of what happened around here. He made some good decisions. He made some timely decisions. He made some bad decisions, but most importantly, he has acted completely unilaterally and shut everybody else out. And that has caused him to make decisions that had he been more open to discussion, he might have been able to avoid. Case in point is the nursing homes. He is on the hook for what happened in the nursing homes. I saw the memo when it came out. I saw the directive for nursing homes to take in COVID patients. It's an undeniable fact that that was a result of a lot of nursing home deaths, and he owns that. And if it's all going to come down to Jack Cittarelli or whoever the candidate's is ability to get that message out there and convince people that that it's the truth and not just political theater. And if they can do that and can get out there and get the facts in front of people and let people make a fact-based decision, I think what they're going to realize is that Governor Murphy is not the appropriate governor for the state of New Jersey. Someone who says publicly, I mean, this is just how arrogant the guy is, that if taxes are your issue, New Jersey is not the state for you. I mean, it's the, how can that guy win re-election? It's,
I mean, that's tone
so
deaf.
If he wins re-election,
it's
our fault.
It's tone deaf. Listen, and I'm glad you said that because, again, looking at these numbers, I mean, listen, folks, and again, if you're just joining us, ladies and gentlemen, it's 9:35 here on the East Coast. The great Brian Bergen, the state assemblyman out of District 25, joined us here tonight on Politically Direct. You know, Brian, here's some numbers for our audience to sort of understand what you just said. And listen, back in 2017, you know, then candidate Phil Murphy defeated, at the time, Lieutenant Governor Kim Godano. The margins were 1.2 million votes by Phil Murphy and almost 900,000 votes for Kim Godano. That's a 300,000 vote margin, and 3.5 million New Jerseyans stayed home during that election. If everyone recalls, even the Star Ledger called that campaign very uninspiring between two people that they couldn't even pick from. Republicans can't have that happen again, Brian. They can't have 3.5 million people stay home again. That's almost a doomsday scenario for Republicans, not just for the governor's race, but I would argue also legislatively. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, a lot of these elections are about turnout, and that's you can change an entire election if you're good at turnout.
You're absolutely right on that, and I think it's something that we have to really keep an eye out for. We'll get back to the election in a minute, but Brian, let me ask you this. As you seek re-election in your own district, for our listeners tonight, those, again, your constituents, what are you most proud of in your time in the state assembly?
You know, so there's a few things. First and foremost, I am proud of my ability to stand there on the floor and articulate and argue and debate and bring the fight directly to the Democrats. I'm not somebody who got in there and says they're fighting for you, quote unquote, and sends a bunch of letters to the governor or puts out some press releases. You know, I'm actively doing it. And so I think I'm doing the job that people sent me down there to do, which is to fight for what they believe in. And in the course of that, I've been able to put together some real good bipartisan legislation that I'm very proud of. The legislative packet I'm most proud of is I went and searched the entire country for the best legislation in the country for veterans. And I narrowed it down to 9 bills and generated a 9-bill package, which is some comprehensive relief for the veterans in the state of New Jersey. You know, typically veterans get all kinds of bills passed for them, but they're not good enough, man. They're like, you know, half off at the Turtleback Zoo, free beach badges, you know, discounts on buying stuff. Nothing real tangible. But the bills I put in are real tangible, life-changing bills for veterans. I'll give you a couple examples. One of them would allow veterans who have a disability rating as a deduction in their property taxes. So if I was 30% disabled veteran, I would only pay 70% of my property taxes. If I was a 50% disabled veteran, I'd only pay 50% of my property taxes. That's huge for veterans. Huge. Right now, veterans get a $250 a year property tax deduction, which is ridiculous. Another one I did was a bill that would encourage veterans to move to New Jersey. So the bill would establish a program in the state that would make a statewide job board that any company, major company, can put a job posting on there. And if a veteran from out of state applies for the job and gets the job, the state of New Jersey will pay $5,000 in relocation expenses for that vet, because we want veterans to live here. We want veterans to want to live here, because veterans are good, active members of society, members of the community, business owners. We want them to be, to live here in the state of New Jersey. So the veterans package is something I'm very, very proud of, and I'm working with all the veterans organizations right now to get moving. I'm also very proud of the work that I've been doing for our police and first responders. I don't know if you know this, Fernando, but there are some things about related to our police that would just stun the world. Here's one of them. If a police officer gets PTSD and that police officer goes and reports it and goes for treatment, the police officer can be determined unfit for duty, potentially, and never be a police officer again. They could lose their job just by seeking help because they held a dying child in their arms, or God forbid had to shoot somebody, or God forbid that they were shot or their partner was shot in the line of duty. And they have to carry those burdens, but they can't get the help that they need for fear of losing their job. So I put in a piece of legislation that would protect police, first responders, and nurses, and EMTs who seek help for PTSD so that they cannot be fired for the job. Because I don't know about you, but I'd rather have a cop who has PTSD go get the help he needs than pretend like he doesn't have it and go on the street every day. So that's one big piece of legislation to do for police officers. Another one is it's appalling to know this, but our police officers in the state of New Jersey have 0 hours of required self-defense training after the police academy. So they get it a couple weeks in the police academy. Then for the 25-year career they have, they don't have to train self-defense at all for the remainder of their career. And what that does is put a couple things. It puts the officer at risk because they don't know how to properly defend themselves. And it also puts the public at risk, because if a police officer doesn't know how to properly physically control somebody and doesn't practice it often, then they're more likely to use force or use excessive force because they're scared when they get in those kind of situations. So that bill is a bipartisan bill with Gordon Johnson. We're working to push it through the assembly. It's a good bill, has a lot of police support. And I could go on and on and on, but my bills for police and first responders, bills for veterans. And then lastly, I feel like I am the voice of small business in the state assembly. There are very few business owners in the state assembly right now. And I might be one or two of them who are Republicans. And these people in the state assembly don't understand the impact of the legislation they put up, because they've never been there. They've never had to skip a paycheck to make payroll. They don't know what it's like to bootstrap a business. They've never had to sell their graduation watch to make their first, vendor payment to start their company. They don't know these things. So that when they put in these pieces of legislation that sound like good ideas and they stack them one on top of the other on top of the other, it becomes death by a thousand cuts. So I feel like I've been in the past 2 years a real solid voice for small business and one of the few in the state assembly. That's a long answer, but I got a lot I'm proud of, man.
No, absolutely. Rightfully so. And I'm glad you're articulating that for the audience tonight, because I think it's important. Never mind, not just because it's an election year, it's important to talk about one's record in a way that's as favorable as yours, Brian. So, I mean, listen, kudos to you, man, for that, because especially as someone up here in Hudson County that has seen what this pandemic has done to small businesses, I mean, there are some that we'll never see ever again. And whether it's on the shore, whether it's here in Hudson County, up in your area, Bergen, wherever, it's so disappointing to see that Trenton doesn't seem to have a lot of empathy. It seems like Trenton is all about spend and tax, but when it comes to rebuild, or help, it seems like those words are foreign in the dictionary there, Brian. I mean, that's how I see it.
No, it's true. And I think a lot of it too, especially related to the business portion for this pandemic, was a lack of understanding. Like when these bills started to get generated early on, they were putting up bills that would have the Economic Development Authority give out loans to businesses. And I kept telling them until I was blue in the face, you guys don't understand. Nobody, no small business will take a loan from you unless they have other loans at a higher interest rate they want to pay off. So you're not helping anybody who really needs the money. If you want to help the people who really need the money, it has to be a grant. Because if it's a loan, then not only do they got to get themselves out of this hole, but they got to get themselves out of this hole plus the loan payment. And that's a bigger hill for them to climb. And anybody who's in business knows that. So I was a big advocate early on to make all these loans grants and get the money into the people's hands as fast as possible. And one thing I was unsuccessful to do, but I fought like hell to try, was I tried to get them to, in the first quarter of 2020, when things were really, really just, we shut down the economy, you couldn't do anything. I stood up on the floor and I said, what we should do is allow all the businesses to keep their first quarter's sales tax remittance. This is money the businesses have in their hands right now. They have it in the bank that they know that they have to pay to the government, the sales tax bill. Let them keep it. It's an instant grant straight to their bank account. It cash businesses like restaurants, they have a lot of the sales tax that they could give back, and they wouldn't listen to me. And I know that they regretted it down the road because there are a lot of businesses that couldn't weather the storm long enough for us to get our head out of our butt and find out how to give them money the right way.
I agree with you. And it's just something that for some reason, so many in Trenton, especially on the left, are oblivious to when it comes to this. Brian, let me ask you this. It is early June. We know, and again, for our audience that maybe is not aware of this, but under the state constitution, it is mandated that the state budget be signed by no later than midnight on June the 30th. Otherwise, when July 1st, 1201 comes around, if it's not signed, then the state would be shut down. We've had some shutdowns in the last, 20 years. We had one under Governor Corzine. We had one under Governor Christie. Right now, what's the state of the budget? How close is it to being signed? And specifically, too, what concerns you about the budget right now, other than the fact that it's ballooning up like a fat kid in a bakery?
I mean, listen, the budget's ridiculous. It's $10 billion larger than 4 years ago. I mean, the spending is just absolutely out of control. There are so many things that bother me in the budget. We'd need 5 days on this call, you and I, for me to get through it all. Here's the bottom line. New Jersey has a really significant spending problem. We spend money like there's an endless supply of it. The governor borrowed $9.9 billion, even though we said he should not do it. I'm sorry, he borrowed $4.2 billion of the $9.9 he was authorized. He doesn't need it, and he can't pay it back because the way they borrowed it was in such a way that you could not pay it back early. So he's sitting on this money and paying interest on money that he never needed in the first place and calling it a surplus. And our budget's $10 billion bigger. So, the budget's awful. I look through it, but there's no chance on earth that I'm voting for a budget that's, $10 billion higher than it was 4 years ago.
And, it's really crazy when you bring up these numbers because, for example, 2004, and I was just doing my research for my other shows, but, then Governor Jim McGreevy proposed a budget to the legislature of $21 billion. That's a lot of money back in 2004.
Yep.
And now, again, this is last year, right? This is before COVID hit, but the governor presented a $42 billion budget to the legislature again in January of 2020. I haven't seen what the number is for this year, but it just seems to just keep skyrocketing. And it's funny to me because, if you think a lot of people on the left in Trenton ran their households the way that they run Trenton, I think they'd be living in a cardboard box somewhere. It just seems like this is fiscal mismanagement on steroids, Bill Bryan.
No, I don't understand. They spend money like they have an endless supply. I mean, they did something recently about free community college, and I stood up on the floor and I said, it's not free anything. It's taxpayer-funded community college. Somebody has to pay for it, and that somebody is us down in Trent. And they spend indiscriminately. Just give you one other example to break your heart. If you watch any of the videos coming out of us in the state legislature in Trenton right now, you'll see we're encased in these plexiglass little cubes around us to prevent the spread of COVID. That cost $70,000 to do. I don't know who the hell they paid $70,000 to do that, but that's a ridiculous number. The fraud, waste, and abuse in our government is just, it should make everybody very upset.
I'm with you. And it just, it's really, it's not even funny. It's now downright just disgraceful as to how tone deaf economically, and I think just overall governance-wise, how tone deaf the majority party is in Trenton. And listen, and I don't want to just paint with a broad brush. There are a lot of Democrats that I know in the legislature, like good moderate Democrats that are reasonable people. I think that they try their best to not be insane, but there, it just seems like this overall, whether it's about being woke, Brian, or about acquiescing to social justice causes, or just maybe being economically illiterate, that seems to be, I think, the prevailing mantra right now in Trenton. Like, who can be more woke? Who can know less about economics than the next person? That seems to be, I think, what's on the agenda in Trenton. And I'm sorry to say, you know, and I want to pick your brain about this specifically. What's even more demoralizing is, like, the New Jersey media institutions aren't really, I think, scrutinizing Trenton the way they should. And, I mean, case in point, I mean, I might get in trouble for this, but even my colleagues at Insider NJ don't go after the legislature, the Democrats specifically, that spend recklessly. And we all know NJTV, NJPBS, you know, Tom Moran and David Cruz, these guys are clowns. It just seems like they're doing New Jerseyans a disservice by not calling out irresponsible behavior. And I'm one of the few journalists that want to stand up about this, but I seem to be in the minority, Brian.
Well, let me start with talking about the Democrats that you mentioned earlier. You know, look, the rank and file Democrat in the legislature is a normal person. I mean, really, I got a lot of friends on the other side of the aisle that I do a lot of good work with that really they're just normal. But it's the leadership that's to blame. It really is. And they have names, these people, and we always say the majority and the Democrats, but it's Speaker Craig Coughlin, Senate President Steve Sweeney, Majority Leader Lou Greenwald. These are the people who are making these decisions that are affecting us. And these other folks are still to blame because they're too chicken to do anything, and they fall right in line. Because, you know, a lot of these people, which I've come to find out, are literally given their positions. I mean, I had to fight through a primary in Morris County, and nobody knew who I was, and I wasn't the establishment choice, but I went ahead and I got my way into the state assembly. And a lot of my colleagues down there, they're just anointed by the power brokers in their democratically controlled areas, and so their loyalty is to them, and so they just vote as a block. And that's what bothers me about them, and I give them crap about that all the time, but the policy decisions that are some far-left liberal decisions, that's coming from Coughlin, Sweeney, and the governor, and Lou Greenwald.
And that's disappointing. And that's disappointing that there isn't more outrage about it. I've had the chance to speak to Craig Coughlin and Steve Sweeney at events, and it's really interesting where they're very charming and they can talk to you sort of like on a level playing field or level-headed. But when they're acting on the floor of the legislature, they're just not acting in a way that is economically beneficial to New Jerseyans. And I think that's frustrating. And also too, like I just said, the fact that journalists aren't calling them out on it is they're just sort of, they're complicit. I would argue that, you know, we think that, you know, the press is that fourth institution that is supposed to keep government in check or keep them, you know, hold them accountable. That's not happening in New Jersey, Brian. And it's, I'm sorry to say, it's doing New Jerseyans a great disservice. And I don't see any relief in sight for this.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with you. I mean, the journalists and the people in the state of New Jersey have to wake up and call these people out. And, you know, I called Lou Greenwald out by name on the floor of the assembly a few weeks ago, and people were accusing me of making things personal. But you know what? It is personal. These people have names, and they are single-handedly working on destroying our state, and they should be held accountable for it, and people need to be called out, and it would certainly be helped if they were called out by the press. I agree.
Oh, absolutely. I did notice you were in Trenton today, right? There was a big rally today, I believe. Gubernatorial candidates were there. I think Jack Chiarelli was there. State Senator Michael Testa, I know you were there. You're very photogenic, by the way, so congrats to you, Brian.
Oh, thank you.
I did notice, what was the feel of the crowd? Was there a sense of optimism? Was there a sense of just like, we're just there to make noise? Or do you think that this can be really influential?
No, I know it can be really influential. I mean, these are the people, a lot of which helped prevent the vaccine mandates a few years ago. I mean, they know what they're doing. The rally was good. The energy was good. The people there were good. I'm not one for getting up and grabbing the megaphone and trying to, like, rile these people up. So I didn't do that. I walked around, shook hands, hugged people, took pictures, talked to them, got to know them a little bit better. People who know me, who I've never met, we talked for a while. These are good people, just trying to make a difference. And the energy was good. It was positive. You know, I did – I got to tell you, though, last rally a few weeks ago, you know, there were some people there who – there were some folks coming out of the state house, and they were running up to them in their face and, you know, giving them a hard time for wearing masks and being rude. And I said something at that rally, and I told them that that's not who we are. We got to stop that stuff. We got positive. These people coming out here, they're not the enemy, and you shouldn't treat them that way. And I made a point to say that on a Jersey First interview a day before this rally, just to point it out to all the people who are going to be there. Listen, you're going to be there. You're there to help change the minds of the legislators. You're not there to confront people and be obnoxious. And you know what? They weren't. It was a great rally, very respectful, people being good, chanting, having fun, getting their message out. I was impressed, and I was happy to be there.
Brian, let me ask you this, because I know it was a question it was a ballot question in November of last year, and obviously it's taken months upon months for the legislature to kind of get their ducks in a row, as they say. But we know that moving forward – and I'm assuming that because it's an election year, we probably won't see any traction until January 2022. But, you know, last November, New Jerseyans overwhelmingly told the legislature by a margin of 67% to 33% that they felt marijuana should be legalized. And subsequently in Trenton, there was a commission formed. You know, these are people saying on a commission earning six-figure salaries. Nothing really is going on. And that's what I suspected. I talked about it on this program. Probably in an election year, nothing was going to get done. How disappointed are you about this commission being formed? And then obviously, like, do you think this is going to have any happy ending here in terms of, you know, all we hear from people in Trenton that were all about marijuana legalization was, well, this is going to be a great source for revenue, and this is going to be great for social justice and expunging people's records. And listen, let me preface this by saying that before entering academia, I worked for 10 years in our criminal justice system, so I saw firsthand the harmful effects of, like, antiquated drug laws. Having said that, I'm always nervous when I hear any legislative body say, hey, I'm so excited about this new revenue source. It could really help New Jersey. I don't know about you, but whenever I hear that, it seems like these, you know, especially on the left, their eyes open up with, like, these visions of grandeur. I'm concerned about the fact that, yes, it's a revenue source, but it might not really address what legalization of marijuana was supposed to address. Does that concern you too?
Yeah, of course. Watching this whole process unfold was nauseating. And, you know, everybody lost all their moral compasses chasing the money. So I'll give you some examples of this. When they were working on the legislation after that referendum passed, there was an expungement bill. There was a bill to decriminalize. Those things should have been done immediately. Immediately, the first day. I mean, who cares how to open a dispensary or the retail, or who cares about any of that crap? The first thing you should do is decriminalize it. I mean, everybody knew that. But they held that bill up. The governor held that bill up while waiting for the full legislation to come through about how to control marijuana in the state. That makes no sense to me. And that just goes to show how they let this money and this power get in the way of doing good for people. I wasn't an advocate for legalizing marijuana, but once it's legalized, it's legalized. What do you want me to do? 67% of people said they wanted it. It's done. So now we should have acted fast. And if it's going to take a while to figure out the logistics of constructing the industry, that's fine. But why hold up expungements? Why hold up decriminalization for that? It's because we have a lot of greedy people who are using that as leverage, and it bothers me, and it still bothers me, and they should be held accountable for it. Another thing that's infuriating about the legalization of marijuana is that these folks who are drafting legislation will not listen to business and industry's concerns. They, in their bill, do not allow for a drug-free workplace at all. And myself and business and industry associations and all kinds of other associations tried to tell them that there are safety-sensitive industries where you can't have somebody come to work high. You just can't have it. And there's no viable test right now that can say whether you smoked a joint 5 seconds ago or 3 weeks ago. So there's no way to pull somebody aside, send them out for a test, find out if they're high, and discipline them. So we wanted drug-free workplaces in places where, like, you know, you're driving a forklift around on a dock. You probably shouldn't be high. And it's probably not worth the risk of you being high, and I'd rather it be a drug-free workplace. The bill doesn't allow that. And no matter how many times you try talking sense into these people, they don't listen. So I'm bothered by the way it went down because they ignored the social justice in a pursuit of greed, and they ignored all the concerns of people in business and industry and just focused on generating revenue, and it was terrible.
You know, I'm with you. And listen, all the points you just made, Brian, were very fair. And I think that they're ones I think that are shared by a lot of New Jerseyans, not just legislators, but obviously New Jerseyans too that are concerned about it. Brian, before I let you go, I know you've had a long day. Just want to pick your brain a couple more minutes here. I appreciate your time here tonight on the show. Folks, it's 10 o'clock here on the East Coast here. We're about to wrap up here with State Assemblyman Brian Bergen out of LD25. And so we appreciate his time here tonight. Brian, something that's come up in recent months, and I know that it's been sort of a political football by people who identify as progressives in New Jersey. And that's, you know, really the uproar about the line. And there's been this sort of talk about abolishing the line. It's been a political football here in Hudson County, for example. State Assemblyman and Majority Whip currently, Nicholas Cerbellotti, was a casualty of it, where, you know, obviously he was taken off the line. We've seen what's happened to Assemblywoman DeCroach up in, not in your district, but nearby, you know, nearby in Morris County, that part of the state. We've also seen what's happened down the shore. So it seems like this has been affecting both Republicans and Democrats. You know, is it time to abolish the line? Is it time to sort of eliminate this from New Jersey politics? Or is there more at play here than meets the eye, as they say?
Well, look, there are many different kinds of lines. Some are more fair than others. I happen to have been an advocate for installing a line in Morris County this year, and I lobbied pretty hard to get it installed. But I was very clear that it had to be a line from the county committee and not a chairman's line. And the difference there is that in a chairman's line or chairwoman's line, the chairperson has all the control. That's what happened to Cerbellotti. It's a, you know, a couple people, power brokers down there make the decision, you're out, they booted them out. But there's another better kind of line, which is a county committee line, where county committee representatives are elected in every district, in every town, by the people closest to them in their party. And those people meet once a year, and they vote on the people that they want to represent the party on the quote-unquote line. I have no problem with that process because, you know what, to run in a primary election where there is no line is extremely expensive. I know because I did it. It cost me $50,000 to run in my first state assembly primary because there was no line. So instead of me just appealing to the 231 people who represent the Republican Party throughout the district, I had to appeal to thousands and thousands and thousands of people. So what that does is that creates a barrier to entry to somebody who wants to get involved in politics. A young person who wants to get involved cannot raise enough money to run in a primary that doesn't have a line. Now, if it's a line and not a chairman's line, and there are now 231 people, as an example, in my district that will be voting in the convention, and you're a young person who wants to get involved, you can go to all those people's doors and not spend barely anything. But if you got a good message, you're a good person, you can win those people over. Like I said to you before, winners win. And if you know the rules and you can play by the rules and meet those people, you can win, and without having to put in $20,000 or $30,000 of your own money, because also, by the way, the first time you run, no one's going to help you. There's not going to be big donors who give you money. It just doesn't work that way. So I'm an advocate for a line when it's not a chairman's line, when it's a line where the county committee votes and they represent the small subsection of the community that they can get the pulse of, and I think it's a good thing. But if they abolish the line, they abolish the line, and we do it that way. It's just, you know, like I said to somebody this year when they were doing the line, I said, if we don't have a line and somebody puts their name on the ballot, they decide they want to run against me on the 25th, but they don't really want to run. They just want to put their name on the ballot and see how they do. Just by virtue of them putting their name on the ballot, I'm going to spend $50,000, whether they do nothing. But if there's a line and we go to a convention and I win, and they don't win because they're not trying hard, then I don't have to spend $50,000 just because somebody put their name on the ticket, if that makes any sense. So there's some good and some bad with these lines. I don't think it's an easy decision. There's pluses and minuses, but like I said before, winners win. And no matter what the rules are, people will find a way.
Brian, it sort of begs the question, does that mean – I mean, I'm not saying based on your answer, but does it mean that maybe county chairs have too much power in this process? Because that's the sense I'm getting from different people I talk to across the state, where, you know, the county political machines, both Republican and Democrat, maybe have too much power. Is that the case, or is it just looking at a county-by-county basis?
It's county-by-county. I mean, there are some chairs with extraordinary power. There are some chairs with not so much power. I mean – you know, like the line that we put in Morris County was not a chairman's line. And so Laura Ali just was the broker of the convention, and the people voted. And they voted based on how the candidates appealed to them. In Passaic County, it's a tighter group. It's a chairman's line. And Peter Murphy is a great guy and a good friend of mine. But the way that they're run there, they get a group of guys in a room, they decide who the candidates are, and that's who it is. So it's county by county. It's place by place. There are good ways to do it and bad ways to do it. I'd be happy with reform in this area. I just don't know if just obliterating the process because of a few really poorly run places is the right thing to do.
All right, fair enough. Brian, before I let you go, obviously we appreciate your time here. You are seeking re-election, and for our listeners tonight, obviously a lot of them will be your constituents. Very simply, why does Brian Bergen deserve another term in the 25th Legislative District?
Look, I think I have a lot left to do. And people, I think, are energized by what I'm bringing to the table. I'm a normal guy who happens to accidentally be an assemblyman. And I like doing it. And I love to keep doing it. And, so I would love the opportunity to stay here and to keep doing the job that I know people need me to do in the State Assembly. And I'm just a normal person, and I can relate. And I'll tell you that for people who are listening, if you have questions for me, you want to know where I stand on an issue, or just want to call and pick my brain, my cell number is 973-202-0634. You call me anytime. I'm an open book. I'm happy to serve my constituents. It's my job.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it there from the Distinguished Assemblyman out of the 25th Legislative District, Mr. Brian Bergen, here tonight. Brian, before I let you go, thank you so much for joining us here tonight after a long day. And do me a favor, could you please let everyone you know how much you really appreciate Politically Direct here via Insider NJ? And I look forward to talking to you again in the future, sir.
You got it, man. Hey, thank you so much. It was a real honor to be here.
I appreciate that. And stay safe and healthy, and I'll talk to you again soon.
All right, take care. Bye.
All right, have a good one. Folks, great interview tonight with Assemblyman Brian Bergen tonight here on the podcast. And so, listen, he touches upon a lot of great points tonight when it comes to describing not just the political climate in New Jersey, but also the economic climate, which is really in decay, to say the very least. So I thank them for his time, and certainly, again, these are the exclusives, ladies and gentlemen, you can look forward to every week right here on Politically Direct. So, and again, as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, you can always write to the show. If you have a suggestion for a topic or a guest, write to me. I love getting emails. I do answer them. PoliticallyDirectNJ@yahoo.com. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at PoliticallyDirectNJ. And also, you can follow me directly on my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. Tons of new followers, plenty of likes. I know people enjoy my Instagram stories. I know you get a bunch of laughs out of them, whether it's about politics, pro wrestling, sports, I don't know, whatever's on my mind. I know you tune in, and I know you're watching, obviously, since I get a lot of views on my Instagram stories. So, folks, keep them coming. Also, hit me up on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen, at NoFilterUribe. That's at NoFilterUribe. Don't forget to like Politically Direct with Fernando Uribe on Facebook. And, of course, you know, make sure that you share it on your walls and tell your friends to do the same. And, folks, I can't say enough, again, about Insider NJ. Start your day with them. Check out the main page on upper right-hand corner. You'll see the subscribe button right there. Once you subscribe, you'll be enrolled automatically free of charge to the morning intelligence briefing. So when you want to know what's going on in New Jersey politics, hey, nobody covers it better than Insider NJ. Make sure you like Insider NJ on Facebook and also follow Insider NJ on Twitter. Well, folks, that's our show for this week here. We appreciate you tuning in. And certainly, again, a special thank you to State Assemblyman Brian Bergen and taking the time to speak with us tonight on a plethora of different issues that we're facing right now in New Jersey politics. So again, ladies and gentlemen, whether it's on your morning commute, getting your workout in, walking your dog now that the weather's great, whatever it is you're doing, hey, stay safe and tune in and you'll be happy that you did. And always remember, it's real, it's here. It's the three-time award-winning Politically Direct. Folks, I am New Jersey's premier journalist and top 100 Latino via the Latino Spirit online magazine, Fernando Uribe, saying so long. I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.